Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
This lawless order is not only nakedly unconstitutional, it is an attack on families and children in this state and across this country.
I can't tell you how many times I've been called by the media for comment on a bill, and the reporter will ask me, well, what does Katie Hobbs think of it? And typically my answer is, I don't know.
We need a high-stakes test for a couple of reasons. One is to be sure that the diploma means something so that employers know that if you have a high school diploma, it means you've learned something. And we need it so that schools don't graduate kids that don't know anything.
At some point, our friends in the legislature are going to have to ask themselves, do you like pay raises for police and firefighters, or would you like to keep paying for grand pianos and multi-million dollar homes?
I'm frustrated that the numbers don't add up, not even close. And it makes it very difficult to have real negotiations.
When I started voting a very, very long time ago, at this point in time, I would go down to my precinct at the church or school in my neighborhood and use a paper ballot and cast my vote, and the votes were counted that night.
And joining me to talk about a member of Arizona's congressional delegation dipping his toe in the water for a gubernatorial run, Arizona's AG joining a challenge to President Trump's executive order looking to do away with birthright citizenship and more, are Marcus Sallertino of First Strategic. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning.
And former state lawmaker Aaron Lieberman. Aaron, good morning to you.
Great to be here.
So, Aaron, let me start with you on Attorney General Chris Mays. She joined a multi-state lawsuit. There are a few of these. Hers was, I think, Oregon, Illinois, and maybe somebody else suing to block this executive order. The judge in that case put a temporary restraining order on it, basically stopped it for a couple of weeks. This seems like something that we're going to be talking about for quite some time. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I remember when then candidate Trump said, are we a nation of laws or aren't we, basically, was his kind of position. And this is what we're going to find out. He's trying to change laws voted on by Congress and signed by then the whoever was president then with an executive order. That's not how our system works. And it's going to go all the way to the Supreme Court, and we're going to find out, you know, what if they're really calling balls and strikes there or not when this thing ultimately gets decided.
Mark, is stipulating that none of the three of us in this room are actual attorneys, it would seem as though it would be a difficult argument to make to change the Constitution with an executive order.
Yeah, I don't think I honestly think that the Trump administration knows ahead of time that one, they knew that they were going to get sued. Two, they know what's headed to the Supreme Court. But what that brings is a discussion about the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And are people going to argue that, you know, if I'm Italian citizens and I come over for vacation in Florida and my wife was pregnant and we have a baby, is that an American citizen? So it's those type of things we're going to end up fleshing out in this discussion. But I will not literally not be surprised. One, the Supreme Court's going to rule this down. But two, I think it will start a discussion in Congress is do we need a constitutional amendment?
Aaron, from a political perspective, I mean, Attorney General Mays has been very upfront about, you know, she will not, I'm going to paraphrase poorly her words. But basically, she's going to try to stand up to the Trump administration, especially when it comes to things on immigration. This seems like a way, for a pretty easy one to get behind and not, you know, we've seen a number of Democrats embrace some immigration stuff
yeah.
Now. This seems like from an outsider, a pretty easy one for a Democrat to say, this is not okay.
Yeah, well, and just to focus on, are we a nation of laws or not? She's the attorney general, definitely has a perspective on that. The reality is on immigration, the Democratic Party has completely shifted to what was the Republican Party position a decade ago. There's a near consensus on that. What will be interesting to see is if they can get anything done now that President Trump is the president, if they can get anything like the deal they had on the table just a short year ago or mm-hmm. whenever it was, that actually would have done something to do what everyone kind of acknowledges. We want stronger borders. We want safer borders. And we want a legal immigration system that allows us to have people to come here to work to do the jobs that we need to get done. Let's see if we can make something happen there and actually move forward.
Marcus, not to suggest that Attorney General Mace is doing this for any reason other than this is what she thinks is right. Is this the kind of thing that helps her potentially in a campaign in 2 years?
Man, you're getting to the question I wanted to answer, so this is great. You know, when you look at the states that sued immediately, you know, what do they all have in common? They're all Democrat controlled states, right? And so which one of these is not like the other? It's us. It's Chris Mace, who is a Democrat in a Republican majority state.
Former Republican. She's a recovering Republican, we call that.
she's a Democrat.
Now.
So how does that pan out in 2 years for her based on the information? If you look at the last election, you know, it looks like immigration was top of mind with the voters, and certainly that's reflected in the proposition that passed. And so I think that they've got to start, you know, play a little long ball here. Yes, your Democratic base is content with that lawsuit. But where do the independents, where are they focused on? I mean, it's going to get used in a campaign ad. There is absolutely no doubt about it. And so how do they respond to it? And they got to start thinking ahead on those things.
Probably gets used in more than one campaign ad, right?
Oh, I would. This election season, despite the fact that we don't have a presidential election, will be just as much money pouring in here from special interests.
Don't turn on your TVs. Aaron, let me ask you about Governor Hobbs' budget, which he released last Friday afternoon. Republicans in the legislature had a look at it earlier this week. Seems they don't like it that much.
I'm shocked that the Republicans in the legislature aren't happy with Governor Hobbs. Look, I was thrilled to see that the governor really laid down a marker, particularly on the ESA program, which is a runaway train paying for wealthy people to send their kids to private school overwhelmingly. It just doesn't make any sense. We have some great private schools in Arizona, some great public schools. I went to both of, you know, those. If you want to send your kid to private school, pay for it, get some donations or, you know, other things for a scholarship. What is the state interest in paying for? Literally, I think her proposal was if you make under $200,000 a year, you'd still be eligible for the ESA, especially when we're struggling with to meet the basics as a state. And we know that from a budget perspective. So I was thrilled to see that. That's going to be a tough one. You know, the governor is very powerful. And in a state like Arizona, where it's narrowly divided, I personally would love to see this thing go as long as it needs and take the argument to the people and saying, really, you know, is this what we're going to choose? We'll see how it all plays out.
Says the guy no longer in the legislature. Let's take it as far as we can.
June 30th, right? Are you crazy?
July, August, they have a, you know, much better reimbursement program down there now.
Well, so Marcus, I mean, we've seen Governor Hobbs, to Aaron's point, has talked about scaling back in some way the ESA program every year. Clearly, the Republicans are not going to go for that. But given what she's proposing on it this year, can she use that as leverage for anything else any better than she's been able to use that issue in past years?
Well, the good news is I do predict at some point we will get a budget. So that's the good news. Here's the crux of what she set up. If you save money on the ESA program, we can spend that money on immigration enforcement. And the Republicans are probably not going to fall for it. At some point, there are some things I think that they can agree on. I think, you know, some money into the housing trust fund. I saw some block grants that go to the AG's office for local jurisdictions to enforce these smoke shops that are selling illegal marijuana to kids. I think that's it. For a parent out there struggling with this stuff, we enjoy that kind of money being spent on law enforcement. There are things that I think they're going to find agreement on. I just don't think at the end of the day, this Republican majority in the Senate and the House is going to go for anything changing in ESAs.
Well, so do you think there can be enough agreement, either of you, so that we don't have the kind of budget we had a couple of years ago, what's been called the Oprah budget, where everybody gets a certain amount of money, some number of millions of dollars to spend?
All the Republicans and a small number of Democrats got the
car. Well, if you voted for it, you got the money.
I mean, yeah.
Marcus, do you think there will be enough agreement so they don't have to do that? Because we saw what happened after they did that. They had to make cuts the next year.
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously an unusual circumstance. But I right now, it looks like the Senate's following that model, but the House is not following that model. And I think that's fine for right now. Let's just start the basic discussion. But I think a lot of this money is going to be treated as one-time money, and that means capital projects. And that means more roads. We're basically going to end up
highways,
doing the same
like
thing.
That.
which is everybody earmarks a little bit of money for a road that needs repair in your district.
Aaron, what do you think? I mean, can they do a quote-unquote regular budget?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, to Marcus's point. I think the Mr. Livingston, the chairman of appropriations in the House, has said the leadership team in the House is united against not doing the earmarks, and they actually want to do a good thing for the state. That it's like the old Mike Tyson law, you know, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And until you're going into Memorial Day and there's still no budget, you have to start spreading stuff around. It'll be interesting to see where this lands.
All right. Let me ask you guys quickly before we go to break about Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Horn. He gave his annual State of Education speech, called for the return of a high school graduation test, a high stakes test where you cannot graduate unless you pass this. I mean, all three of us have kids who would, in theory, need to pass this at some point. Lawmakers did away with this a number of years ago. Can you see it coming back?
Well, let me tell you my frustration on this as I'm sort of laughing in the mic is we have pulled this rabbit out of the hat I don't know how many times. We literally do standardized tests, then we don't want the standardized test, then we want it, then we don't want it. And it's like a carousel just going round and round. And at some point, I'd just like a decision made and just be over it. I am doubtful that it could make it through the legislature. There's no doubt about that. I'm very doubtful the governor would sign it.
Okay. Aaron, what do you think?
This might be the first time since I've been doing this show that I'm going to agree with something that Tom Horn is saying. I think tests like this really put a focus on all kids learning, and that's a good idea. I'm happy my own son isn't listening right now because he's in school, because he would be groaning. But the reality is, I was in favor of high stakes tests. It puts the impetus on teachers to teach and on students to learn and everybody to get focused on what's really going on. I don't know what good we're doing for a young person to say you're a high school graduate if you actually haven't really learned anything.
Well, so how do we avoid, though? Sorry to interrupt. How do we avoid what happened last time, to Marcus's point, where we had a test, people weren't passing it. We had a new test, students still weren't passing it. We kept sort of making it easier to pass until they eventually passed it.
Yeah. I mean, I have a whole list of things that I would do. I'd start with preschool for every kid in Arizona, which would dramatically eventually change the outcomes. I'd have way more certified and specialized teachers in the classrooms because we'd be paying them decently. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately we'd get to smaller class size so every kid could learn. And, you know, the reality is it's not a mystery. And like super conservative states like Florida have class size limits that are, you know, 30-40% lower than what we have in Arizona. But that's what those things do. It's the old Lucy, you know, moving the football.
Yeah.
Like the test is the test. Let's figure out what it takes to actually help kids learn and make those investments as a state. That's why, by the way, that the ESA thing is so pernicious, because instead of actually fixing class size for the vast majority, overwhelming number of our Arizona kids in our Arizona public schools, we're helping millionaires literally pay for private school. Like, that's a values choice we have made as a state legislature and a then governor, and that's what we need to retrade to get focused on helping every kid learn.
Marcus, let me start with you on Andy Biggs, Arizona congressman, former state lawmaker, has filed a committee to sort of explore the possibility of running for governor. Is this a surprise to you at all, especially given that President Trump basically said, Karen Taylor Robeson, if you decide to run, you've got my support?
Yeah, that was a little bit of a jaw dropper. Now, do I know that Andy wants to come home? Yeah. Do I know he's not having like the funnest time he's ever had in Congress? Yeah. But I didn't expect him to go run for governor. I do sense that there's something strange happening here. I don't have my finger on it, but this feels weird. I mean, Travis Grantham then jumps into the CD race for that congressional district.
Yeah,
within
former state lawmaker.
Minutes. And so that was clearly coordinated,
yeah.
I felt.
Clearly.
And so there's something also going on. There's something bad's going down at 7-Eleven, as we used to say as kids.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
And also, I mean, what Republicans said the minute it happened was, oh, no, not again. And so I think every Republican was holding their breath for a clean primary. Let's just have one candidate and let's get through the primary and let's have that general ballot. And this mucks it up.
Well, so how analogous do you let's say that he does decide to run and he and Karen Taylor Robeson are the two candidates. How analogous is that primary to the one we saw 2 years ago between Karen Taylor Robeson and Carrie Lake?
It's a little different in a couple ways. One is Trump, as you mentioned, has basically endorsed Karen if she gets in the race. One. Two, a PAC was immediately set up, a super PAC, that is run by, you know, the Trump team, if you will, to help Karen.
Mm-hmm.
And so it will be difficult, you know, we've certainly seen those scenarios, right,
where Trump endorsed two candidates. He endorsed two candidates in the congressional primary. I mean, if you think Donald Trump's word going into an election means anything, you have not been paying attention.
That could happen. There's no doubt about it. But it doesn't equalize the PAC, the super PAC funding that will be coming. And by the way, let's also not forget Karen's pretty well financed.
Yeah,
in
her doesn't
own
really
campaign.
Need a super PAC.
Mr. Biggs has not had to aggressively fundraise pretty much his entire time in Congress. I mean, it was sort of that seat was a Republican lock.
Well,
so
let's just go back. How badly was Carrie Lake outspent in her primary, you know what I mean, by Karen Taylor Robeson? 3-1, 4-1 or something like that? I mean, the Republican primary voter is not influenced by a splashy TV commercial or anything else like that. We've seen this again and again and again. I just say, run, Andy, run. This is great news. Not since Carrie Lake, you know, said she was going to double down and run for Senate have I been this excited about a Republican candidate. And the reality is the base Republican voter is really a fan of these far-right candidates. I mean, that's what, just what we've seen. And that's the reason Democrats have been winning statewide. I think that's what opens up, creates an opportunity, because then they lose narrowly in a general election. But I think this is a great development for the Governor Hobbs, for sure.
What do you say something doesn't feel right? Like, what are you looking for to see, like, maybe what's going on behind the scenes here?
I've got to make some phone calls. But, you know, I'm not going to tell you who I'm calling.
Sure.
But it just – the sense of it was just sort of strange. The timing of the immediate jump in by Travis, that was – you know, I thought was coordinated. Is there somebody specifically that's begging Biggs to get in this race? I will tell you that most Republicans that I talk to are tired of losing. And so I think, you know,
what Aaron said is correct.
They
swept the legislature.
However, the fact of the matter is, like, it's dawned on them that they have to have a winning candidate. And mm-hmm. I think that is different this cycle than it was 2 years ago, that they are focused on who can win.
So you're saying the fever has broken and the Republican primary voter has become strategic in playing the long game. Go look at the comments in some of these articles, like huge, just regular people, not the folks who are following what's going on in the State House, regular people, tons of stuff around, oh, I'll never vote for Karen Taylor Robeson. Oh, it's so great that Biggs is in there, da-da-da. By the way, there's also some, we're so sick of losing, he's too conservative. But you know, the average Joe voter is going to like what Andy Biggs is serving up in a Republican primary.
Marcus, do you think that Biggs cannot win? Like, do you not think there's a chance that if he was going up against Katie Hobbs, he could win?
No. I think any Republican going into this next cycle has a good chance. There's no doubt about it. You know, look, it's 2 years away. Anything's humanly possible.
Right.
For somebody to sit here and say so-and-so is going to win, it's absolute insanity.
Who do you think has a better chance to beat Governor Hobbs, Karen Taylor Robeson or Andy Biggs?
I'm not going down that road. I mean, and look, all of that is absent of this discussion. I know everybody loves to – I got to defend the Republicans, but let's not forget the Democratic Party is a mess in itself. I mean, they've been attacking Rubin viciously this week. Calling him Kyrsten Sinema, you've got a new party chair. You threw out the one that was endorsed by every Democrat. I mean, look, both
this
parties
is a look
are,
over
are
there.
Getting
this is a look over there argument right
Water
there.
Water skiing squirrel
exactly,
over
exactly, when he doesn't like the topic that's going on.
Well, so let's talk about voting. We're talking about the next election because there's a bill that a House committee approved this week that would do away with vote centers. These are places where in the county any voter can go to any of these vote centers. You get your ballot printed out. They seem to be fairly popular, especially in a place like Maricopa County where, you know, you can live and work, you know, many miles away from each other. Aaron, does this seem like one of those election type bills that even if it makes it through the legislature, Governor Hobbs will say no thanks?
I suspect she will. And as Secretary of State, I mean, we had polling places and it could be a complete nightmare. There's just more things to go wrong. There is no perfect system. My wife surprised me this morning talking to me about how she thought we should do stuff to get to our results faster. And so I think there is an opening there. I think Gina Cobb was on the show talking a little bit mm-hmm. about some of the things that we could do. Getting away from voting centers does not make sense to me. It actually makes things much more efficient because you're not sitting there trying to figure out, are you in this polling place or not? When my first election, we were in polling places, regularly people would show up and be told, yeah, this is not your polling place. You drove by here, but you got to go over there. Mm. Some of those people never make it. That's why we moved to that voting center model. I think we can have some reforms to get to a quicker election day result, but this is not a good idea.
Marcus, do you think that there might be an opening here for some kind of compromise, be it this or something else?
I mean, I talked about this back in December, that my bold prediction was that the governor was going to sign something on elections this cycle. And to that point, by the way, Democrats in the legislature need to give her a little wiggle room to be able to do that. That, you know, as Aaron just said, even Democrats are a little frustrated by the amount of time. So they need to be cautious in allowing her to be able to sign that bill. One. Two. What's absent a little bit from this discussion is that these vote centers are filling a hole because it is very, very difficult for counties to find facilities for polling places, right? And so churches are able to say, no, thank you. We don't want to deal with that potential drama or liability on our property. And it's happening everywhere. And so, you know, now that we're looking at schools, well, guess what? Parents aren't really excited about having that potential hot flash point on their kids' campus.
Or giving kids a day off where they have to find childcare if they work.
Oh, there's nothing worse for a parent having to hear that. Like, like 3-day weekend. Oh, no, thank you. so, God, I hope my wife's not listening. But anyway, so these are some of the things that we're going to have to work through. I mean, are high schools maybe acceptable? I don't know. But it can't
There's not that many high schools. We're talking about one for every 1,000 voters. The church that was our polling place in Paradise Valley is leveled and is being, you know, made into, you know, luxury homes right now. Like, there's just not that many places around where you could do this. Again, I think there is. I think Marcus makes a really good point. There can be something done here. This feels like the wrong solution to me.
All right. So, Aaron, when you were in the legislature, did you ever have the desire to have the governor come down and to be able to ask her or him questions?
I am intrigued by this because I can count on one hand the number of times we saw Governor Ducey. It was the state of the state speech. That was it. One time at a bill signing. It was a very interesting kind of prime minister's questions.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
After the British government does this.
My immediate thought was, could they send DPS to go compel the, like, what if the governor just says, no, I'm not doing it. Like, I'm the governor. Are we going to have one of these situations that, you know, we were always talking about where they send DPS to go get the missing lawmaker or whatever else? Is the governor going to get escorted down there? The one thing I was completely confident of is that if the legislature was the same party as the governor, we would not be having this proposal. There is no doubt. It was funny to me. It was a party line vote. I guarantee you, if things were reversed, it would have flipped around. I actually think it's an interesting idea and you know, to be able to engage directly with folks and hear those conversations. I can't quite figure out what you do if the governor just says, I'm not doing it at that point.
Well, that's interesting.
You need a willing, you know, willing participant on both sides.
Well, and Marcus, to Aaron's point, this also came up during the Napolitano administration, right? A lawmaker then said, hey, we should have the governor come down and field questions. I mean, everything else aside, it would be super interesting TV, right?
Oh, it'd be good for the press. But look, there's no way it's happening. There's no governor that's like, I can't wait to spend my time talking to the legislature.
But by the way,
they are an executive power. They are going to say there is a separation of powers. They're going to do everything humanly possible. And also, they're, you know, the conversations go a lot better if you just call them up one at a time up to your office and say, okay, how are we going to work this out? Rather than standing in front of a microphone and 90 legislators peppering you with questions.
There would definitely be a lot of grandstanding. I will tell you, I ran into
Wait, there would be grandstanding during this kind of thing, Aaron? Come on.
For everybody watching at home, that's what people used to say in the and I'd say, nobody's watching at home. There's a few lobbyists in their office. You know, there's no one else watching. People might be watching this. But I'll tell you, I ran into Governor Symington once a few years ago, and he told me, which kind of shocked me, that he used to show up at the Democratic caucus, for fun in terms of making it more of a cordial relationship. We never saw anything like that when I was in the legislature. And people don't realize everything is actually quite close together. I mean, you can get to the governor's office in a 90-second walk. But you seldom take that walk, especially if you're the opposing party and, you know, a new lawmaker. So I just think it's an interesting idea. It is amazing to me how little attention gets paid to the Arizona legislature when how much it affects the lives of Arizonans. And I think things that actually brought that more front and center is probably a good idea, but this one seems to face long odds.
All right. Last word goes to you, Marcus. If this passes, and as you say, the governor's probably not going to sign this. If this were to go into effect, is there any reason to think that, like, people might learn something and get some reasonable information out of this kind of question and answer session?
No, it'll be completely politically charged. What kind of quote can I get out of you that I can use on a mail piece or a TV commercial? That's what it will be about in today's day and age. Maybe if it was in the 70s and the 80s, it might be a different discussion. But right now, it's just sort of campaign fodder.
Maybe they should do it without any TVs. Maybe that's the answer.
Just radio.
Just be a private, you know, just a members-only thing to really hash it out.
That's interesting. All right, we'll have to leave it there. Aaron Lieberman, Marcus Delatino, thanks you both for coming in. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.